The committee of the whole will please come to order. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Chairman, please move House Bill 158 and 160 to the bottom of your list. We're still on the yellow seat. Just move those two to the bottom of the list.
Representative Patton.
Mr. Chairman, privilege of the floor.
Go ahead.
Fellow legislators, this is an international day. I have the pleasure of knowing and recommending to you for your attention Donna Shelley from Sheridan, Wyoming. Hold your applause for a moment. It's international because she has brought with her Sarah from Lebanon, Nadia from Russia, and Fuja from Azerbaijan. Can't pronounce it. They are currently all students at Sheridan High School.
Welcome to the House, ladies. The first bill for our consideration is House Bill 6. The reading clerk will read the bill. House Bill number 6, introduced by Representative Gingrey, an act relating to solid waste disposal districts, repealing limitation on reappointment of board members and providing for an effective date. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom was referred House Bill 6, Solid Waste Disposal District Board Terms, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye are Representatives Byrd, Kennedy, Greer, Kasparic, Larson, Lockhart, Reeder, Winters. Excused was Representative Summers. Signed, Representative Lockhart, Chairman.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the committee of the whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Bill number 6 do pass, and I'll turn the explanation over to the good chairman of Judiciary.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This bill, what it does is solid waste disposal districts, right now there's a term limit. You only can serve 3 terms and then you have to go off. What this does is take those that prohibition, that 4-3 additional terms out of the bill. So where this came about was in a little town that's on the western slope of the Tetons, but still in Teton County, which the good senator down the hall is from. In that community, it's not a very big community, actually, but they have a solid waste disposal district. It takes a while to get people trained up to be on a solid waste disposal district. It can be a little mundane and a little complicated, and it's not real glamorous. For most of the times, most of the big boards that people want to get on in the counties or fair board, or in my town it's the airport board, everybody wants to be on, and they'll conduct interviews and pick people. The solid waste board is one where you're usually out trying to convince people to please be on the board. There's not a lot of people usually clamoring down to get on there. When you get into counties such as over in Fremont County, they have a pretty complicated solid waste district board because they have such a large operation. And those people, it takes them years to figure out how the whole operation works. And you hate to lose that institutional knowledge after they've served 3 terms. And if you're concerned that people would get on there and never leave, the commissioners still have the ability to not appoint people. They can look and say, well, you've been on there long enough. Let's get a new fresh face in here. There's other people available, and they can put them on. The difficulty is, and where this came about was in this small community on the western slopes of the Tetons, they just don't have anyone else to ask. They've looked around and they just can't find anybody. And so now they're sort of stuck because you got to live in that area to get appointed. but there's no one to get. So what this does is just take out, right now it reads, appointee shall serve a term of 3 years and may be reappointed for three additional terms. And what it does is delete the four three additional terms.
Hearing no further discussion, the question has been called. Are you ready for the question? Question being called, all those in favor of Chairman Lockhart's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 6 do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. House Bill 06 has passed the Committee of the Whole.
Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 100. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill number 100, introduced by Representative Stebson, an act relating to vehicle registration fees, providing that the value of assistive devices shall not be included in calculating the value of a vehicle for registration purposes, providing definitions and providing for an effective date. Excuse me. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, to whom was referred House Bill 100, Vehicle Registration Fees, Assistive Devices, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those legislatures that voted aye, Blake, Blevins, Campbell, Hutchins, Yeagy, Larson, Laux, McKim, and Dave Zwanitzer, and signed by David Zwanitzer, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Zwanitzer?
Thank you, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that House Bill 100 do pass. And I'd like to turn over the explanation of the bill to the fine Majority Whip.
Representative Mr. Majority Whip Stubson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The this bill is really brought to do a couple of things. First, it's brought to bring some consistency to this issue across the state. And second, it's really designed to put those that have disabilities in our state on kind of an equal playing field with the rest of us. And the issue that arises is this, that a number of folks who, when they buy motor vehicles, may have some sort of addition to the vehicle, whether it be to the steering mechanism or wheelchair ramps, what have you, to allow them to be able to utilize the vehicle. Some state treasurers within the state have been charging the registration fee on the vehicle against the price of both the vehicle and that assistive device. And that can, you know, jump up the price for these folks significantly. We heard some testimony during the committee hearing of an incident in the northern part of our state where a vehicle was purchased for $23,000, but the assistive device alone was $17,000, and they were charged registration on that entire amount. So, you know, where the rest of us having a $23,000 car would pay registration on that amount, this person paid on a $40,000 vehicle. And the other area where consistency comes in is you have got not only different approaches among the treasurers, but different approaches depending on whether these devices are installed at the factory or whether they're installed aftermarket. You can have the exact same vehicle, the exact same equipment, and it can be treated differently in those two circumstances. And so this really, if you look on page 2 of the bill, assistive devices is defined, and it's narrowly defined. It clearly includes only those things that will help someone who's disabled to have functional capabilities with a motor vehicle. And it just sets a common rule and a common framework across the state and says, you know, you have, as everybody else does, you have to pay on the value of your vehicle and not any of these additional devices. So with that, I'd take any questions.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and in favor of this bill, My closest friend has a limited health condition to where he needs a wheelchair to get around, one with an electric operation. He has a wife that has a visibility problem. But with these devices on the car, he can get in the car. She can put the device away in the back of the car, and they could live a very well alone. And I think this kind of thing is something we don't want to get extra taxes on, because it's really a recognition of those people that need help and giving them the right kind of help in the way of taxes. I urge your support.
Further discussion on the bill? Do I hear the question? Question being called. All those in favor of Representative Zwanzer's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report, to do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 100 do pass, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. House Bill 100 is passed the House. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 92.
House Bill 92.
Reading clerk will read the bill.
Thank you.
House Bill 92, submitted by Representative Reeder, an act relating to crimes and offenses specifying the inclusion of 911 emergency reporting systems in false reporting offenses, creating the offense of abuse of 911 emergency reporting systems, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, to whom was referred House Bill 92, Interference with Emergency Calls, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representative Blake, Blevins, Campbell, Hutchings, Yeagie, Larson, McKim, Dave Zwanzer, one no vote, Representative Laux, signed by Representative David Zwanzer, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Zwanzer?
Thank you, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 92 do pass. And I'll turn the presentation of the bill over to the fine representative from the center of the state.
Representative Reeder.
Thank you for that. House Bill 92, Interference with Emergency Calls. This bill actually just maybe fills a little gap that we have in the system right now. As it stands, the existing statute only addresses someone that is interfering with someone that is making a 911 call. So if, say, the wife is calling in a 911 and the husband interferes with her or interferes with that call, maybe tries to get the phone away from her, then that statute can take into effect at that time. What they're needing is, with the increase of the number of false and harassing calls that they're receiving, which is defined as a person who knowingly reports falsely to a 911 emergency reporting system. There's language in subsection B where a person commits a misdemeanor if he knowingly calls a 911 emergency reporting system for a purpose other than to report a situation that he reasonably believes requires prompt service in order to preserve or protect human life or health or property. This would, what they're hoping with this change in addition to this statute, they do a lot of promotion and mail outs, and they could actually put on that now that it is or could be a fine and a penalty for doing this kind of an act. They get calls like, hey, can you bring me over a pizza? And what happens when a 911 call is generated, they spend 3 to 6 minutes deciding where this call is coming from and the address, and they have to dispatch a police officer. And that takes about 23 minutes, they're saying. So what it does is it affects the timing maybe to get to another call because they're on this call deciding it's really not a 911 or an emergency situation. The other, one of the other top calls they get is people that call in and have a UFO in their backyard. And of course, they dispatched a police officer. And this is one of the cases where, you know, really this person might be on drugs. They might have some other problems, even medical problems. So that's why the word knowingly is in there. So, you know, they have enough of these cell phones where you hit 911 and handle that. But it's just if you're knowingly reporting falsely. And they get about, for 1 year, January 1 to December 5th, just in one location, they had received 29,631 calls. There was 3,901 that were welfare calls, and there was actually 2,422 911 calls. So as you can see, that's 21% of the total calls are legitimate calls, and the others are. So I know this got passed on a bill here previously today. It's the same kind of language, if you will, that was kind of in that one. So I would just ask you for your favorable consideration, and I'll stand for any questions. Thank you.
Discussion on the bill. Question being called. All those in favor of Representative Chairman Zwanzer's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on bill number 92, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
House Bill 92 has passed the House. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 107. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 107 is introduced by Representative Halverson. An act relating to trade and commerce prohibiting filling of liquefied petroleum gas containers without the owner's permission, providing for marking of liquefied petroleum gas containers, providing penalties, providing a definition, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, to whom was referred House Bill 107, Unlawful Use of Liquefied Gas Containers, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blake, Blevins, Campbell, Hutchings, Yagi, McKim, and Dave Zwanzer. Those who voted no, Representatives Larson and Laux. Signed by Representative Dave Zwanzer, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Zwanzer?
Thank you, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 107 do pass. And I'll turn over the explanation of the bill from the lady from the Valley of the Stars.
Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First, I'd like to address the numerous questions I've had on this bill as to what it does not do. This bill does not affect small propane cylinders, commonly referred to as 20 to 100 pound cylinders, which hold approximately 5 to 25 gallons of propane gas, and they are used for outdoor grilling, recreational vehicles, and some work applications. It does also not apply to tanks that are owned by propane customers. This bill refers to tanks that are leased from propane suppliers to their customers. This bill will make it a misdemeanor to knowingly fill a tank not owned by the propane supplier. If this is a safety issue and this is a private property rights issue, from the earliest days of the compressed gas industry, a fundamental safety principle has been that only the owner of a propane container or his designated agent should fill it. This industry safety requirement is justifiable since only the owner knows how the container has been used and has a vested interest in its proper use and maintenance and is therefore accountable. Accountability is very important for safety. Accountability underpins industry practices, industry standards, and state and federal laws and regulations. From time to time, questions have arisen regarding this principle, asking whether such restrictions is necessary for safety or whether it constrains customer choice. An example of this occurred in 1991 when the Utah Attorney General issued a legal opinion that such a rule of the State Propane Regulatory Authority was a violation of the antitrust laws. The Utah Attorney General's opinion was overturned when a U.S. District Court declared that there was no antitrust violation. In addition, earlier that same year, the Utah legislature agreed with this safety principle and amended the Utah State Propane Law to add a specific requirement in their statutes that containers could only be filled by their owner or his designee. Most container laws apply only to the larger ASME containers, that's the American Society of Mechanical Engineers, and those are containers of about 100 to 1,000 gallons, and not to portable cylinders. It's a common industry practice for the propane retailer to retain ownership of these containers and lease them to their customers. By leasing the container, the retailer retains responsibility for its maintenance and inspection, and the container laws help ensure that he retains control over who puts product into this container. The container law reflects basic private property law rights. Antitrust scholars have examined this issue from many angles and concluded that the elements of an antitrust violation are simply not present. Endorsed by safety engineers, state and federal regulatory authorities, insurance companies, adopted as law by legislatures in at least 42 states and tested in court, it is a rule by which propane retailers and customers can live. Wyoming is one of eight states that currently does not have a propane container law.
Is there further discussion on the bill? Representative Logan. Larson, sorry.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, if I may, I'd like to stand in opposition to this bill. Fellow members, I struggle with this bill for a couple of reasons. It's been an age-old practice if you were a propane distributor and you had tanks out that you had the right to fill that tank, and you enter into an agreement with your customer, a contractual agreement that says that if you are the customer, that the customer would not invite anybody else to fill that propane tank, and nobody else will fill that propane tank unless the customer asks them to do so. So in the event that the customer runs out of propane and for whatever reason decides to call a third-party distributor in to come and fill that tank, he has no knowledge other than he may see a sign on the tank that says it doesn't belong to him, whereas the customer could say, no, I bought that tank. It's mine, which is not an uncommon practice. And so he fills that tank innocently, feeling that he's just doing a service to a customer. This bill would then make him be the wrongdoer and be subject to a misdemeanor penalty. I think that there's a contractual agreement between the propane provider and the person who's using the tank, and if the person who is the customer invites somebody else to fill it, that's the person that the grievance ought to be with. So I would urge you to defeat this bill and stand in opposition of it. Thank you.
Representative Goggles. Oh, I'm sorry. Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I see an incongruence here with the page 2, lines 1 to 5. It says, if a liquefied petroleum gas container bears on the surface of plainly legible characters of the names, mark, initials, or evidence of owner of the container, it says that there. And then you get down to line 23. It says it is unlawful for any person to fill or refill a liquefied container which is not marked as to ownership is provided in subsection A of this section. Now, maybe I'm missing something here, but I've got a propane tank, and I don't have a sign on there saying that I own it, because I do own it. And it says that it's unlawful for me to have it filled unless I've got it identified that that I own it, I guess. And then again, back on the top of page 2, lines 1 to 5, it says, if it bears a surface, you know, I just need some clarification. I think maybe it can be fixed, but it's not ready now.
Representative Goggles.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I rise in opposition to this bill as well. I believe it's a government intrusion on commerce, and I believe this body has expressed itself in those terms.
Representative Greer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I rise in opposition of the bill as drafted. I realize we were told this doesn't apply to our barbecue tanks and the tanks for my camper and so forth, but it just says here, containers. I mean, there's no definition. I went through the statutes. I don't see anything that ties that to that specific exclusion, and I just can't support it.
Representative Laux.
Mr. Speaker, I rise against HB 107. In committee, there was discussion, and this went quite a while. An interesting thing, there was a question asked, the relationship between the person that's leasing the tanks and the provider of the fuel and the owner of the tanks, if they not have an agreement or a lease agreement or a contract of some kind, and they said, yes, we sure do. And so I asked if that contract was binding or not. They said, yes, it was. So the main part of this bill is it's brought up part of, on being something having to do with safety, but the bottom line is if they have a contract, they need to exercise a contract. It was brought up in testimony that they agreed that it was much cheaper to have the DA's office enforce this as opposed to filing a civil suit. So, that's all, sir.
Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had a quick question for the bringer of the bill. Are we talking about, as far as tanks go, are we talking about large ones that are made for home use that are more or less permanent, or are we talking, I mean, does that include tanks of smaller sizes, 50 gallons or thereabout, that are more portable and mobile?
Representative Halverson.
Thank you for the question. It does apply only to the tanks that are fixed and 100 to 1,000 gallons in size.
Representative Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to comment on there was a question about what if the owner lies? So the owner tells one of these rogue pirates of who we're filling, there would still be prosecutorial discretion. The prosecutor probably wouldn't bring the case, and even if they did, you'd have a defense if you were one of these pirates, because you could say, well, they lied to me. They said they owned it. So I don't think that's a concern. And then the issue of shouldn't you go after, it's true that the provider of the gas and the owner and the homeowner are going to have a contract. And so then the argument is, well, if they went and violated the contract and allowed a pirate to fill it, shouldn't the gas company sue the homeowner? The problem is you want the homeowner as your customer. You're going to lose all your customers if you're suddenly suing all your customers. What you want to do is go after the pirate and stop him from stealing essentially your business. You're the one who went to the, you know, you spent all the time putting in the tank, has your name on it. It's your tank. You're renting it to them. And suddenly, after you get it all set up for the homeowner, you get it all set up, it's all ready to go, and then suddenly a pirate comes in and starts filling it for you. Well, you were putting that there so you would get that business. And so there's that problem. And then the good representative raised a good point about defining the container, but I think we can do that on second reading. We probably need to bring an amendment to state precisely the size and the type of container that we're discussing.
Representative Larson.
Mr. Chairman, I would just I very much appreciate what my Eagle Scout friend from across the state just mentioned. Of course they want to keep their friend, their customers. That's the whole point. It's the customer that's in violation of the contract, and if you go back and prosecute them, you're going to lose that customer, but they're the one that's in violation of the contract, not the person that's delivering the fuel. And so I think, and I appreciate the fact that he reinforced the point that I made earlier. Thank you.
Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would, for next reading, amend to include the size of the containers and address the seeming contradiction on page 2. Thank you.
Okay. Is there any further discussion? Hearing the question, seeing no further discussion. Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Zwanitzer's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that bill number 107 do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
The bill has failed. Pursuant to House Rule 10-5B, the bill having failed a voice vote, a standing division vote is required. All those in favor, please stand. All those opposed, please stand. Having failed a standing division vote, a roll call vote is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Baker.
No.
Barlow.
No.
Berger excused. Blake.
No.
Blevins. Blevins,
no.
Blickrey,
no.
Brown,
no.
Burkhart, Bird,
no.
Campbell,
no.
Kennedy,
aye.
Coleman,
aye.
Connolly,
no.
Davison,
aye.
Eklund,
no.
Esquibel,
excused.
Esquibel excused, Filer,
no.
Freeman,
no.
Gay, Gingery,
aye.
Goggles,
no.
Greer,
no.
Green,
no.
Halverson,
aye.
Harshman, Harvey,
no.
Hunt,
no.
Hutchings,
no.
Yagi,
aye.
Kasparic,
no.
Kirkbride,
aye.
Croker,
no.
Crone,
no.
Larson,
no.
Lockhart,
no.
Laux,
no.
Madden,
no.
McKim,
aye.
Miller,
no.
Moniz,
no.
Nicholas, Northrup,
aye.
Patton,
no.
Paxton,
no.
Petroff,
aye.
Piperinen,
no.
Reeder,
no.
Simlick,
no.
Simlick,
no.
Summers,
no.
Stubson,
no.
Teeters,
no.
Throne excused, Wallace. Wallace excused. Walters.
No.
Watt.
Aye.
Wilson.
No.
Winters.
No.
Zwanitzer Dan.
No.
Zwanitzer Dave.
Aye.
Zwanitzer Dave.
Aye.
Mr. Speaker.
Excuse.
Mr. Speaker excused. Burkhart.
Excuse.
Burkhart excused. Gay.
Excuse.
Gay excused. Nicholas, Nicholas?
No.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 12 aye, 40 no, 8 excused.
Pursuant to House Rule 10-5B, House Bill 107, having failed a roll call vote, is indefinitely postponed. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 115. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 115, introduced by Representative Greer, an act relating to wrongful death claims, providing for tolling of statutes of limitations upon filing of appointment of wrongful death representative, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Speaker, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 115, Wrongful Death-Tolling of Statutes of Limitation, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representative Baker, Connolly, Gingery, Halverson, Croker, Crone, Miller, Walters, and Watt, signed by Representative Gingery, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 115 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment, and I'll turn over the explanation of the amendment and the bill to the good gentleman from Washakie County.
You have heard the motion on the floor, Standing Committee Amendment. Representative Greer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I can tell we're all a little sluggish and tired, and this is not going to help. For those of us that were here last year, you'll recall we reworked the wrongful death statutes. I'm going to try to go as brief here as I can. Wrongful death is a cause of action that when someone is killed wrongfully and there's negligence involved, their estate, I shouldn't say that, their family members, their spouse, their children, have a right to bring a cause of action against the person who killed them. Car accidents are a very common situation where you see this. What we found ourselves a few years back with the Supreme Court decision, there was some ambiguity or a change in course in how this procedure should be followed. We wanted to bring together a bill that would make this procedure clear. Something I always said is a first-year law student or a first-year attorney ought to be able to pick up the statutes, read to it, and understand the procedure to help take care of his client. Through an interim work, we came out with a bill. It was, I think, a very good bill. It's worked very well. Having a year under our belt, we realized that there might be just one point, if you can believe this with the work we did, one point that might need some clarification. So for all of you that are still awake, let me explain that to you. That's what the bill does. And what we have is now you file for a wrongful death representative. That is an action that you'll take to the district court, and that's the district court will appoint that person to pursue that cause of action against the person that killed, in most cases, your family member. The wrongful death actions that are available have a 2-year statute of limitations, meaning they need to be investigated and brought to the court within 2 years. In the Act, and you'll see this bill, and so in Section 138, 103B, Romanette 2, what we wanted to do is when you brought this action to get a wrongful death representative appointed, we would toll the statute of limitations for 30 days while that person got appointed and anything that came up with that was sorted out. We just really didn't want to put anybody at a disadvantage. It was discussed and pointed out that maybe, to make it very clear, because there are other statutes of limitations, primarily dealing with professional malpractice, that we wanted to make it clear that all statutes of limitations were told just for this 30-day period. And so that's what the bill does. It just brings a little bit of clarity into a relatively complex area of the law. I felt that the bill that did come out of the Judiciary Committee last year was a really good bill, and this is a minor cleanup. The Standing Committee Amendment, which has already been moved, and I'd go ahead and explain that just briefly and get on to the voting here. I think it was the chairman from Judiciary made a good point. If you look at the bill itself, it says the limitation period described under Wyoming Statute 138-102D, well, that's the statute of limitations for wrongful death action. We struck that, and to try to make it simple, we just said all applicable limitation periods. Well, again, we're trying to make this clear, and I think this is a good point that the committee made, is why don't we just go ahead and say both? It's a duplication that doesn't have any potential to cause conflict in interpretation, and is just makes it real clear. So with that, it has been moved, the Standing Committee Amendment. I'd ask for your favorable consideration on that. Take any questions.
You have heard the motion on the Standing Committee Amendment. Are you ready for the question? Question haven't been called. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The Standing Committee Amendment number one has been adopted. We are back on the bill.
Mr. Chairman, I'd be more than happy to go into the 85-year history of wrongful death actions if this body would like, or we go ahead and vote on it if there's no questions.
Any further discussion? Okay. The question being called, all those in favor of Chairman Gingrey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill number 115 do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 115 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 86. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
House Bill number 86 is introduced by the Labor Committee, an act relating to Child Protection Act, Children in Need of Supervision Act, and Juvenile Justice Act, providing that the court ordering out-of-home psychiatric residential treatment shall refer the matter to a multidisciplinary team for selection of a treatment facility, providing determination procedures, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Speaker, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 86, Child Placement Orders, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Those who voted aye are Representatives Baker, Connolly, Gingrey, Halverson, Croker, Crone, Miller, Walters, one no, Representative Watt, and it is signed by Representative Gingrey, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Gingrey?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 86 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. The Standing Committee Amendment, it was just clarifying some language. I'm actually going to ask you to vote for it, and then I have a Committee of the Whole amendment that actually fixes some grammar in it. So if we could just dispense with the Standing Committee Amendment real quick, and then we'll do the next amendment.
You have heard the motion on the Standing Committee Amendment. Are you ready for the question? Seeing no discussion, question haven't been called. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The Standing Committee Amendment number one has been adopted. We are back on the bill. Chairman Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Committee of the Whole Amendment number one. What happened was in the committee, we agreed that we needed to clarify better that this was only for psychiatric residential treatment facility, not for residential treatment facility. And so we thought we did that with the Standing Committee Amendment, and then I came down and spoke with LSO, and they pointed out that our grammar wasn't the best. So this one is worded a little nicer where it says, when the court orders the child to enter a psychiatric residential treatment facility. So that just is better language than the Standing Committee Amendment. I'd urge your aye vote on the Committee of the Whole Amendment.
Seeing no discussion, the question has been called, and we are on Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1. All those in favor of the Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The amendment is adopted. Back on the bill.
Mr. Chairman, I turn over the discussion of the bill to the good Chairman of Labor.
Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Child placement orders is a response to the Medicaid cost savings study that we did in the Labor Committee. I know that sounds really funny when you're talking about court-ordered placements, but the fact is, if a judge orders a child into a specific placement, a specific group home, a specific school, a specific placement, then Medicaid regards that as a court order. But if a multidisciplinary team does the placement recommendation to the Department of Family Services, then Medicaid will pay half of the bill. And so the cost savings is tremendous as we go through this. When you consider how much money is spent on child placements, where they may be 30 days, they may be 90 days, they may be a year. And so if we can have assistance in paying for half of this bill, it does help. It's quite a few of the courts already use this system where the judge says the child needs to be out of the home. And in the bill, starting on page 2, it talks about, on lines 1, the first section is where the child is adjudicated neglected. And then the second section, on page 3, decree where the child is adjudicated delinquent. And on the page 4, decree where the child is adjudicated in need of supervision. So those would be the three cases where if a multidisciplinary team, and this is a team of people, of medical professionals, psychiatric professionals, people who work with them perhaps in the school, and this team gets together and they already know the child and they already know the needs. And so then they can make the recommendation to the Department of Family Services, and then following that recommendation, because of mental health parity laws, and it is considered a mental health issue, then that's when Medicaid kicks in and pays half of the bill. So it just saves half of the cost of these placements from the general fund expenditure. I'll stand for any questions.
Representative Logan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The only thing that I would like to point out, and I certainly understand the potential cost issues, but I don't want this to be a matter of money because, as it was pointed out, we are looking out for the best interest of the child. So I hope that the decision is not made based on the economics of the situation. So giving the department this wide latitude to make the decision, I guess, gives me a little bit of pause. I think some level of deference, I would hope, would be given to the multidisciplinary team. Thank you.
Representative Goggles.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do have a couple of questions for the bringers. One is, when we're talking court, are we talking district court, drug court? If you could answer that question for me, then the second question would be, the providers here, the psychiatric residential treatment, is that a private corporation in Wyoming, or are we talking about out-of-state placement?
Chairman Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to answer the one question about this bill actually. Just by passing this bill saves the state of Wyoming $4 million. So it's a pretty important bill financially. But he raises a really good point. Hopefully we're not making these decisions about children based on economics. So that's why we built in some safeguards in the bill. because the concern was if DFS is making the decision, would DFS make the decision based on their budget? So what we did was put in there, so let's say the MDT meets and they say one thing and then the department looks at it and they do something different. You can appeal. So any party, so it could be the county attorney appealing, it could be the kid's attorney, and then you have a hearing in front of the judge. So there is an ability to get back in front of the judge and say this is not correct. A psychiatric residential treatment facility is a medical facility. That's what the distinction is here. The whole issue comes down to a judge can't, the reason the judge can't put the name of the facility, because then Medicaid interprets that as a legal decision, not a medical decision. They want someone who has doctor by their name to make the medical decision. So the medical decision is, should this person be in a psychiatric care? Because then only then can Medicaid pay. There are three of these facilities in our state, but for a large part, a lot of them end up going out of state. These are really serious cases, and the really good places are few of them are out of state, and so we actually spend a lot of money per kid. There's actually not that many kids doing this, but it's a lot of money per kid because you're putting some incredibly intensive treatment on this particular child. And then the other question was, it's district court, because this is always, this is juvenile court. Juvenile court is always in district court, so it'd be district court.
Is there any other discussion on the bill? Are you ready for the question? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Gingrey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that House Bill 86 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 86 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 119. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
House Bill number 119 is introduced by Representative Gingrey, an act relating to the Department of Family Services repealing obsolete provisions related to the transportation of children and payments to facilities, amending the Juvenile Justice Act and the Children in Need of Supervision Act to delete references to placement at the Wyoming State Hospital and Wyoming Life Resource Center, updating references to the food stamp program with references to the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Speaker, your Committee Number 1 Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 119, Department of Family Services Programs, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Those who voted aye are Representatives Baker, Connolly, Gingrey, Halverson, Croker, Crone, Miller, Walters, and Watt, signed by Representative Gingrey, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Gingrey?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 119 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. And, Mr. Chairman, before I explain the Standing Committee Amendment, let me just sort of explain the concept of this bill. The executive downstairs asked his different departments to go through not only their statutes but also their rules and regulations and see what is still needed, if there are things that could be taken off the books, things that need to be updated. The Department of Family Services did an outstanding job of this. They actually had a particular staff member, and she did an outstanding job of she actually came up with this entire bill. And the other great thing DFS did was they're going through, and they're still in the process of all their rules and regulations and doing the same process. So finding where things that aren't needed anymore, updating them, and it's something to be very proud of that Department of Family Services is doing, to make sure our statutes are up to date. So they brought this to our committee to update. And essentially what the large part of the bill is there is a program in the state called the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. That is the fancy word for food stamps. And so all throughout this bill, you'll see where food stamp is crossed out and Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program is put in. That's actually the real name for it. And what the amendment does is they wanted us to put in parentheses SNAP. So part of what this amendment does is everywhere you see Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, we stick in the word SNAP. Also, the amendment, we missed one spot. Throughout the bill, we changed some of the references to the Wyoming State Hospital and the Wyoming Life Resource Center. We actually don't place children that go through these anymore, especially at the state hospital. State hospital actually has no facilities for children, and they actually end up going to a different facility that's not state-related. And so we stuck in throughout the bill a residential treatment facility, and that's what the amendment's doing. So throughout the bill, mostly with that SNAP thing is what you see. But what the bill does do that sort of is substantial is at the very end there's some repeals of some statutes that the DFS no longer needed. So this is, again, a great bill in that we're pulling things off the books that we don't need. For example, if you flip over to page 21 of your bill where the repealers are, the first repealer is 14-4-101, and that is reference to, we used to call it homes for defective children. We certainly do not use that term anymore, so this would pull out the language referencing homes for defective children. We also, there's a provision in there in 14-4-114 regarding payments. We don't do that anymore. And then 14-6-304 deals with transportation, which we don't do anymore. And 14-6-305 deals with home leaves, which we don't do anymore. So all of those are things that we no longer do, and so they needed to be pulled out. And I would ask your favorable on first the standing committee amendment and then on the bill.
Okay, you have heard the motion on the standing committee amendment. Seeing no further discussion, and the question having been called, all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The standing committee amendment number one has been adopted. We are back on the bill. Seeing no further discussion, question being called, all those in favor of Chairman Gingrey's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that bill number 119 do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House bill 119 has passed the committee of the whole. Our next bill for consideration is House bill 116. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
House bill number 116 is introduced by Representative Lockhart. An act relating to public lands, creating the Select Federal Natural Resource Management Committee, providing for appointment of members, providing duties, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Speaker, your committee number two, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 116, Select Federal Natural Resource Management Committee, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye are Representatives Burkhart, Escobel, Harshman, Moniz, Nicholas, Stevenson, Wallace, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the committee of the whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that bill number 116 do pass. And with your permission, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to give a little bit of background on how we got to this bill. A year ago, last December, it became clear that the legislature could be of help in working with the various federal agencies that were promulgating rules, making decisions, and that sort of thing without our involvement. And so in the last session, which was a short session, as you know, we decided to put together a subcommittee of the Ag Committee and the Minerals Committee. And we funded that for a few meetings and set out to see what this would do as far as involving the legislature and helping the counties, the conservation districts, and the public with their interface with the rules and regs that were being promulgated and implemented by the federal government. I passed out a summary sheet of the meetings that we had, the people that are in attendance, and the results that we think we've started, some of which we've accommodated. But I'll give you just an example of where we were when we started. The Bighorn Basin had a resource management plan that had been worked on for a number of years, and the county commissioners from that Bighorn Basin came to us and said, we need some help on getting the federal government, the BLM in this case, to listen to our sides of the issues. And so that was the first launch of our meetings, was to face that issue, and it worked out quite well that we brought everybody to the table. We began to talk about the things that were on the minds and in the work of the county commissioners and how that would affect the resource plan that was into its final draft stages with a selection of three choices, two of which were not very satisfactory. With that implementation of that meeting and the results of that meeting, we were able to modify their approach to the management resource plans. It worked in the very beginning, and then it worked throughout the year. And that brings us to what's in front of you now. As I mentioned, that was a subcommittee of ag and energy, or ag and minerals. This year, we're proposing to form a select federal natural resource management committee, and it will have some additional approaches in it, in that we'll have appropriations as part of that, because the consequences of these decisions, if you read down through the summary sheet I have, are big. If you take federal lands that have been used one way or another and they're taken out of opportunity for development going forward, big consequences to hunters and fishermen, ag interest, energy interest, even the people that want to get on it for visibility. So we've made some impact in the past. We think we can do a better job with this one. You might ask, why are we only having it for 1 year and a very small budget of only $16,000? We think that as we go through this year, we'll be able to come back and put together a fully fleshed out idea for going forward or not going forward if it doesn't continue to work. So that's the introduction of it. Excuse me. It is a very short bill, and it's, as you can read in the title, it's creating a select federal natural resources management committee. And it provides for the appointment of the members. That's done by the leadership in the House and the Senate, and providing for an appropriation. I'd like to call your attention to page 2 on line 11, and it points out how the makeup is. And we do this with some flexibility to leave to the legislative leadership. But at least one member from Joint Agriculture, State and Public Lands and Water Resources Interim Committee, and the Joint Appropriations Interim Committee, and the Joint Business. You can see just one person out of each one of those is necessary, and then the fleshing out of the committee is left to the leadership. And it goes on to say how the Speaker of the House will appoint three members of the House and to the nearly as possible reflect the percentage of elected membership, majority, and minority. I would say this, and I probably should have talked to the minority party leadership, but one of the things that's very difficult with the numbers they have is for them to join a lot of meetings, so we want to work this out interparty to make sure that they have the time and energy to do this, and if not, we can bring somebody else, but they will have that choice. The organization of it, if you look at page 3, line 9, select from among its members one senator and one member of the House to serve as co-chairman. This is the first time we've done one quite like this in the past, and it worked extremely well. We had a ag interest House member, as the co-chair from the select committee or subcommittee, and now that we're in a select committee, we're going to look at something similar to that. We had a minerals chair from the Senate, and they balanced those two out, and it really worked out extremely well. I would expect that if this thing goes forward and is passed, we'll have the same sort of mix of the leadership in that way. What is different with this one, we can, with this subcommittee, develop, or this select committee, we can develop legislation. We didn't have that authority last year, or we would have done something like this during that. We did it as a joint minerals and committee in the limited amount of time at the end of the year. So I would stand for questions and try to answer any questions. I do know that we had other representatives that were at some of those meetings, and if they'd like to speak, I think that would be great.
Majority floor leader.
Mr. Chairman, just a question. I wanted to be sure. I don't know if they had it drafted that way on purpose, but on page 3, lines 18 through 20, it says they can develop and introduce legislative responses. Does that mean, Mr. Chairman, that this committee can introduce legislation? And if it cannot, would it have to go shop its findings around to some committee to introduce? And if so, somebody might want to amend it to make it clear that it has the power to initiate and introduce legislation.
Representative Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you read the words, it's develop legislative responses to federal practices and actions necessary to project interest of the state of Wyoming. And it doesn't say they draft the legislation and do that, but it's responses to the federal policies. They can do that. And if it's better in the ag sector, if it's better in maybe appropriations, if it's better in the other one, it can go that direction.
Representative Greer.
Mr. Chairman, we do have a standing committee amendment directly on that point, dealing with that particular issue raised by the good majority floor leader.
Clearly, it was my error to miss the standing committee amendment and urge your support of that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Greer.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, and this kind of came up so I couldn't speak with the good chair about minerals on this. The very issue that was raised by a majority floor leader was this issue we had discussed over time regarding select committees drafting legislation and the amendment, which has not been moved yet, but the amendment just says that it insert this, that select committee, after they would develop responses, would then refer such responses to the appropriate standing committee of the Wyoming Legislature for further action. I've been thinking about the intent of that word responses and the distinction between that and then also drafting legislation. And I believe it's something I can work on and bring a second reading amendment that would allow this select committee to make their responses, because they're looking at responding to federal agencies, but then also require, if they have proposed legislation, that they take proposed legislation through an interim committee. And with that idea in mind, I would prefer, for the sake of keeping things clear, to go ahead and defeat the standing committee amendment.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I've got to move the standing committee amendment before you can be defeated and or passed. And with that, I will move standing committee amendment number 1. I apologize for my oversight.
We are on the standing committee amendment. Is there any further discussion? Representative Greer.
Again, Mr. Chairman, I would like the opportunity to distinguish between those two items, as I said, what are responses by the committee and proposed legislation by the committee, bring that as a clean amendment on second reading, and then to encourage you to defeat this particular amendment, which I pushed through in the committee.
Any further discussion?
Question on amendment.
Question haven't been called. All those in favor, say aye. All those opposed, no. The standing committee amendment number one has failed. We are back on the bill. Representative Goggles.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I did serve as a member of the committee, what I would call the subcommittee. That's what we called the subcommittee at the time. And my recollection is that any legislation that we had talked about had to go through either the Ag, Joint Ag Standing Committee, or the Joint Mineral Standing Committee, as I recall. And I would encourage you to vote for this bill, give it 1 year to see what it can do or not do, and then come back and take another look at it.
Representative Paxton. Mr. Chairman, in a former life as a county commissioner, I had the opportunity to attend a number of these meetings, and I can tell you that the process worked very well. We brought together people from the federal agencies, conservation districts, from local governments to discuss federal land issues, and we all know how important those are to the state of Wyoming. There were a great number of citizens. All these meetings were very well attended. I think everyone had an ample opportunity to express their views on this. A very productive meeting all the way through, and I would encourage your passage of this bill.
Representative Simlick.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not going to say anything more than I support the bill. I'll just tell you there is some drafting problems, I believe, in the bill. I'll just point that out, and perhaps if you find some more, you can let us know that we'll try to correct on second reading. On page 2, for example, where it talks about the President of the Senate shall appoint 3 members of the Senate, you go down on line 12, and it says 1 member from the Joint Agriculture. I think that should be the Senate Agriculture. So just some drafting things that has been pointed out, and we'll correct them if you also have noticed that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I also stand in favor of this. As I saw this, I'm not any big guy to want to make government any larger, but having attended a meeting with the Bureau of Reclamation in one of the southwest corners of trying to visit with the Bureau, and they're trying to add more and more land, and then attending another one this meeting in Rock Springs, well, down there in the southwest again. They had a lot of people there listening from all the federal agencies. There were people from congressional delegation, from the governor's office, and there were some good things talked about. We saved the turning of this 144,000 acres that would have really cut down the multiple use, the grazing that was going on, the mineral development that was going. And this group was able to have the ear of these people, and they went home and kind of changed their direction because Wyoming was talking and all these people were together, and this was one of the main things that got them all together. So as I attended the meeting and a couple of these, I think this is just about a necessary thing if we want to keep our multiple use and our continued dialogue with the federal government to accomplish what we want to do in this area. So I urge your support.
Representative Summers.
Mr. Chairman, I stand on in support of House Bill 116. 50% of Wyoming's land is managed by the federal government, and in some counties of western Wyoming, that figure exceeds 80%. The economy, custom, and culture of Wyoming are tied to these federal lands, and the citizens of this state will benefit from the interface this committee will have with federal agencies. Citizens feel overpowered by federal bureaucracies, and this select committee should provide a valuable forum to discuss federal lands issues. Once again, I stand on in support of this bill.
Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just have a question about the bill. I think this is a really good idea, but does it replace the money that was set aside for county commissions and special districts to be able to hire experts in the field? I know that we, in the Bighorn Basin, we did hire some experts when we were working with the BLM, or, well, actually three different federal agencies. And without the expertise of the consultants that we hired, we wouldn't have a full lake. We wouldn't have grazing on some pasture land, some BLM land. And I think this is a really good idea to help us develop policies. But is this designed to replace that natural resource fund?
Chairman Locker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank the good Chairman of Health. And, this is not to replace that fund. The only money that we have in this is for the legislators' expense and some staff for capturing what goes on in the meetings and helping organize it. And as you see, it's just $16,000. It's not very much. And the efficiency of this committee was unique in that most of the time we tried to make the meetings in one day and back, and I think that would be the expectation going forward. So it's not a big expenditure. We have helped the counties, and the counties did an excellent job, and I would just give you this as feedback. It gave them, if you will, a forum where they could get their ideas heard, and most of them across the board appreciated the opportunity to get there. But last but not least, I think the federal agencies with which we dealt felt like we were giving them a fair shake on their side of the questions, and with that, I think they tried to cooperate more than they might have done if we do it through lawsuits, etc.
We are on House Bill 116. Any further discussion? Are you ready for the question? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Lockhart's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report it, do so with a recommendation that Bill number 116 do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
House Bill 116 has passed the Committee of Whole. Our next majority floor leader.
Mr. Chairman, please add to your general file list House Bill 90 and then House Bill 144.
Our next bill for consideration is House Bill 158. The reading clerk will please read the bill. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Chairman, I made a mistake. Please add after 116, add 90, and add 144. And then 58 and 160 will go below that. So the progression would be 116, which we just did, then House Bill 90, then House Bill 144, then 158, then 160.
Thank you. So our next bill for consideration is House Bill 90. Would the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill number 90, as introduced by Representative Larson, an act relating to landowner liability, referencing additional activity for which protection from certain liability is provided and providing for an effective date. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 5, Agriculture, State and Public Lands and Water Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 90, Recreation Liability, Aircraft Activities, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye are Representatives Blake, Campbell, Eklund, Greer, Hunt, McKim, Semlich, Winters, and Dan Zwanenser. And it is signed by Representative Semlich, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Representative Zwanenser.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 90 do pass. There are no standing committee amendments. And I turn over the explanation of the bill to the good sponsor from Fremont County.
Representative Larson.
Mr. Chairman and members of the House, I need to give you a little background on this statute before you, hopefully to help you understand the intention behind this bill. Largely in response to the public desiring to have access to lands for recreational activities, landowners who are willing to share their lands with people to recreate but hesitated to do so for fear of litigation, we created the recreational statute which protect landowners from litigation when people use their property for recreational purposes with permission. And if I may, I'd just like to read that statute. It's quite short. It says that, except specifically recognized or provided in Statute 3419105, which I'll refer to, an owner of land owes no duty of care to keep the premises safe for entry or use by others for recreational purposes, or to give any warning of dangerous condition, use, structure, or activity on such premises to persons entering for recreational purposes. Now, I made a reference to another statute there that Section 105, where it talks about the landowner's liability, and we'll come back and we'll discuss that as we go there. And so what we've done is we created a statute that if a landowner would allow someone to come onto his property for recreational purposes such as snowmobiling, hunting, fishing, those are some of the activities that they talk about in the statutes, and that person damages his personal property or injury comes upon him or anyone who is in the party, the landowner is protected from litigation. Now, you would think that for most instances, for example, it doesn't have horseback riding on the list or it doesn't have mountain biking, and you would assume that if this was to be challenged, that for the most part the judicial system would accept that horseback riding is a recreational activity, as in mountain biking. This bill that I'm bringing forward today kind of brings up a unique recreational activity in that throughout the state of Wyoming there's 46 documented private airstrips, meaning these are landing strips for aircraft that are either grass or dirt that are on private property, mainly owned by ranchers, some by some private corporations. And there have been times when people who own aircrafts would have used these facilities, and there have been more times that they've asked when private landowners have been hesitant in allowing them to use those airstrips for fear of litigation if they should damage the aircraft or pile it up and get hurt. Because of the uniqueness of aircrafts, they tend to fall out of the sky, or if they do get damaged, it's an expensive repair. It might be questionable whether they would automatically be considered a recreational vehicle or sport. But to pilots, flying is very much recreational, and it's something that we would like to get placed into the recreational statutes of the recreational definitions of this statute. We heard today from testimony from a gentleman who lives north of here, close to the northern border of the state, who identified that his father, who upon leaving the Second World War as a pilot, settled in that part of the country and bought a ranch, and one of the first things he'd done was build a little private airstrip. And he liked to putt around in a little Cessna 120 and has enjoyed flying all his life. that airstrip shows up on the navigational charts. And if you Google for airports around that community, this little airstrip will show up and you can see it there. He indicated that his father, who is still alive and is 88, loves to have aircraft land there, but as people call him, he's hesitant to allow him to use that for fear that there could be some sort of litigation. And they've talked about how they've structured the ranch to prevent, to protect them from that sort of litigation. He talked about how they have those power parachuters comes in, and his father, who's still 88, likes to go with them and still likes to get in the air and do things. We have a number of these around the area, and we would just like to add a protection to the private landowner on whose land these airports are, and the benefit of that is that it will allow those people who like to fly recreationally to land on these strips. And so the definition that we put in the statutes is non-commercial aviation. Now, I referred to one point in the statute, and this is important for you to remember, that the exception to recreational activity is if I'm coming to your ranch or your private property and I'm paying you to be there to hunt or to fish, then you would be under obligation to maintain that airstrip for safe passage and the recreational use would not apply. Or if you were to ask me permission to land on my airstrip and I maliciously with intent done something to the airstrip that would cause damage to your plane or bodily injury, then I could be held accountable. And that's the exception to that. So I would hope that my explanation of this was sufficient enough, and I hope that upon consideration of this that we might be able to pass this bill and in emulating the words of the great sage who chairs the Agriculture Committee, that we might be able to let this bill fly out of the House and land safely in the Senate. I stand for any questions.
Chairman Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I understand the intent getting to the landowner with a strip, with just a landing strip or something like that. I'm just wondering if maybe on second reading some definitions of maybe non-commercial, because when I read non-commercial, I read that to mean that an airline's not flying in there. But I see what you're saying. I think what you're using it as is no charters, no spray planes, no that type. The difficulty is that by doing this, so you're going to include them under 3419.103, you're limiting their liability. An owner of land either directly or indirectly invites or permits. They get that limited. The difficulty is that, so if you have an airport, and I'm thinking of one that's in your county, in Fremont, in the northern, well, closer to my county, they don't have any commercial operations there, but it is run by the town. So then when you go over to the Governmental Claims Act, a governmental entity is liable for all damages resulting from bodily injury, wrongful death, or property damage caused by the negligence while acting within the scope of the duties of the operation of an airport. So airports, even if they're run by government entities, are not exempt. You still can sue. I'm just wondering how that would correlate between the two, and I'm just wondering if the easy fix would be to, maybe on second reading, clearly define what you mean by non-commercial. I assume what you mean by it is not just no airlines. You mean no planes that are spraying can land there, no charter planes can land there, just the person who's out recreationally doing it.
Representative Larson.
Thank you, Representative Gingrey. You know, we took this legislation largely from the wording for this legislation, largely from the states who have currently passed legislation, being Kansas, New Mexico, and New York. It seems to be the most acceptable generic language without making the bill too burdensome that has that has come about, but I would certainly be happy to work with the good representative, see if we could fix that on an amendment at a second reading, and see if we can maybe so that we can be prepared for the next reading of the bill. Thank you.
Is there other discussion on the bill? Question being called. All those in favor of Representative Swanenser's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill number 90 do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 90 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 144. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
House Bill 144, introduced by Representative Connolly, an act relating to kindergarten readiness, early childhood development, and early literacy development, providing for development of policy and system structure through statewide consensus discussions as specified, prescribing duties, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 4, Education, to whom was referred House Bill 144, Kindergarten Readiness Programs, respectfully report same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass for the following amendments. Those who voted aye are Representative Connolly, Freeman, Hunt, Northrop, Patton, Paxton, Pieperinen, Summers, and Teeters, signed by Representative Teeters, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure?
I move that when the Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
Thank you. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that bill number 144 do pass.
Are you going to move?
And I will turn the explanation over to... And further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment.
Thank you.
And turn it over to the good representative from Albany County.
Thank you. Folks, I think that you will find in your box both the Standing Committee Amendment as well as a research memo from the LSO office that has my name on it and HB 144. House Bill 144 is about kindergarten readiness. The data is overwhelming. The first 5 years of life are critical to a child's lifelong development. Young children's earliest experiences and environments set the stage for future development and success in school and life. Early experiences actually influence brain development, establishing the neural connections that provide the foundation for language, reasoning, problem solving, social skills, behavior, and emotional health. We know that families and communities play critical roles in helping children getting ready for school. Schools can improve the readiness of young children by making connections with local child care providers and preschools and by creating policies that ensure smooth transitions to kindergarten. We know that children entering kindergarten vary by their early experiences, skill, knowledge, language, culture, and family background. Schools must be ready to address the diverse needs of the children and families in their community and be committed to the success of every child. So now to bring you to the LSO handout, you'll see that on the top of page 2, 39 states have some type of state-funded programs for early childhood education. These programs vary widely. Wyoming is one of only a handful of states that does not have any state programs or any state coordination of what does happen in the state. So what does this bill do? It helps to rectify that situation by having us as a body begin to understand the issues and explore policy recommendations. And so what you'll see with the Standing Committee Amendment is that any place where we talk about state policy, what this bill does is have us start to consider a matrix of recommendations. It brings together, the bill brings together, through the Department of Family Services,
stakeholders that are listed on the bottom of page 1 and 2, including first and foremost parents, and then kindergarten teachers, the private sector of child care providers, UW Literacy and Early Childhood faculty, and several state agencies to develop a matrix of policy recommendations that address five important elements that are listed on pages 2 and 3 of the bill, including early literacy strategies, methods of continued parental involvement, a wide variety of what are considered the most important elements for us to consider. We then have these recommendations presented to the Joint Education Committee in October of this year so that we can choose or not choose to act upon them. So I want to end by telling you that the excitement for this was palpable in the room. We've been talking and needing to talk about early childhood education for years, but the reality is that early childhood work in the state has been done in incredible silos. I mean, and even saying every one of those silos is working really well, whether it's independent child care providers, parent groups and advocacy groups, the Department of Education, the Department of Workforce Services, the Department of Family Services, each have been actively involved in thinking about and doing something about early childhood education, but there's been no coordination of it. And this is our first step. This is our toe in the water, and it's a toe in the water that everyone in the room was incredibly excited about. And with that, I'd like to first move the Standing Committee Amendment, which, again, simply adds the word recommendations after when we talked about state policy, as well as added a couple of additional stakeholders. So I move the Standing Committee Amendment to HB 144. It should be in your boxes.
You've heard the motion on the Standing Committee Amendment. Do we have discussion on that? Seeing no discussion, question being called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. The Standing Committee Amendment number 1 has been adopted. We are back on the bill. Chairman Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a few questions. And as being a survivor of these debates that we had on this floor, gosh, now it's, I think it's almost 10 years ago, the quality counts and all of that. So I just want to make sure what we're doing here. You said repeatedly that this will help us to choose to act or not to act, and then the handout that you gave us talks about state-funded, statewide program. I assume what the objective of this bill is to move toward a state-funded pre-K program, and I know we've looked at that quite a few times, and I just wanted to know if that was at least one of the objectives that you're looking at potentially getting to, because when you use the reference to state-funded, statewide program, that's the only thing I seem to come up with. I appreciate that the word recommendations got put in, but even on page 1, line 12, where it says state policy, and now I think it says state policy recommendations, I'm a little confused as to what we will do with those recommendations. So let's say we come up with recommendations on what should be taught at the pre-K level. All of those institutions are private institutions. Those are private preschools. Are we going to be dictating? Is that going to be a law that all private preschools must implement a certain curriculum? Or is this going to be more like, here is a suggestion of what your curriculum should be so your kids are ready for kindergarten? So that would be my second question. And then my other question was, over on page 3, it says this would help to develop professional development pathways. I'm just curious. I thought that's what we have currently with that program in Workforce Services. I think it's called Quality Counts, where they provide that training to the pre-K people. So I'm just wondering if that's duplicative. And then my last question is on page 3, line 18, where it says DFS may contract, and I always get a little nervous when we start talking about consultants because we seem to have a tenacity to always find consultants from out of state to tell us what to do. Does that mean money from, is there money in this bill, or is DFS just going to find the money for these consultants within their existing budget? I think that was all my questions. Thank you.
Representative Connolly, since you've got four questions fired at you.
Holy moly, Mr. Chair, you're a better counter than I am. I'm not 100% sure I have the four questions down. But to answer the last one first, in terms of money, the Department of Family Services, there is an administrative note, but the Department of Family Services can absorb all of the costs, so there is no fiscal note for this. The question about the original question, and the question that I think gets to the heart of the good chairman's other questions, is about where is this bill going, and is it bringing us to having or mandating state-funded pre-K? And let me emphatically answer that the answer to that question is no. It's just no. You know, I'm not sure any of those 39 states have fully funded state-funded pre-K. There's 39 different models out there. What I imagine happening is getting a kind of list of comprehensive policy options that we could consider, and that we haven't done that yet. I mean, to be honest, for as much as we have kind of talked around this issue, we haven't done it. All right, we barely have. The last thing that I remember is that we have mandated that every school district have the option for kindergarten. We don't mandate kindergarten. And so what I imagine is a matrix of options. Those options may include, for example, one would be full-day kindergarten. Another would be a good senator on the other side of the hall has a bill that may be coming our way. I'm not sure. But it's an option that would allow for a preschool curriculum that could be used in the home for those families that choose to use it. Now, it comes with a pretty steep price tag, and so I'm not sure that that's a direction that we necessarily want to go in. But I could imagine that could be one of the options. Another option might be a competitive grant for school districts to kind of experiment with something that might work in their community. It might not work in my community, but it might work in their community for early childhood education that families could opt into. So I imagine a list of policy recommendations with the possibility of enabling legislation that we could begin to have the kind of serious discussion about early childhood education.
Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This has been a matter of discussion since before I came into the legislature, and we do have a lot of preschool programs. We have Head Start. We have the literacy programs that are financed by federal grants. We have Title I preschools that are in our school systems. We have the developmental disability preschools that offer special education for children who are developmentally delayed. So we do have a lot of different people that are involved in this, and I think that's a good idea to have a lot of people involved. You know, I raised four girls, and I had four girls because I didn't want just two. I wanted children. I wanted to raise children. I wanted to teach them my values and what I thought was important in life, and I wanted to raise them to be productive, responsible adults. And I have to tell you, they're better moms than I was. They're incredible women. Here's the deal. I think it's great that we have all of these programs. And the world is a lot different than when I was a young mother. My daughters, three out of the four, have to work in order to make the house payment. I didn't have to. I got to stay home. I got to raise my kids until my kids were all in school, and then I chose other options. But I think that as we do this, we need to be careful that we develop the standards just by defining what does kindergarten readiness mean. What does it look like? What is it? Does it mean that they can sit still in this chair? Does it mean that they can get along with each other without hitting? Does it mean that they can read? Heavenly days, let's not cut off the chair legs one more time. You know, when my girls went to kindergarten, there was a playhouse in the kindergarten room, and there was a dress-up box. And those things do not exist anymore. All the role-playing and all the social development that happened in kindergarten just 30 years ago does not happen anymore. That's been moved down to the preschool level. So let's not just keep cutting off the chair legs and say, now you have to know the alphabet, and you have to know how to count to 20, and you have to know how to use a pair of scissors. What preschool is designed to do is language development. That's number one, language development. In the developmental preschools, if a child can't talk, then they teach them sign language because it uses another part of their body to communicate. And once they learn that sign language, then they understand language. Oh, I can get my ideas across to you. Language development. Statistics show that when children of parents who have college degrees, by the time they enter kindergarten, have a vocabulary of 5,000 words or more. If that both parents have a high school degree, that number drops to 3,000. If their parents do not, then the number just keeps dropping. The less education the parents have, the less vocabulary or language that the children have. And so what does kindergarten readiness mean? Well, I think part of that needs to be defined by the parents. I think we have a lot of good programs out there. But I think what we really need to develop, and I think this bill is a good avenue to do that, is to develop a standard for what kindergarten readiness means. But what I do not want to see this bill lead to is state-paid programs where everybody has a similar set of standards and a curriculum. Because if I have to work and I want to send my kids to the church daycare and what they learn for language is, yes, Jesus loves me, then that's language and that's what I want them to learn. What I, my values, what I want for my children at a very early age, that's my responsibility. It is not the responsibility of the state. We have programs like Head Start for children at risk financially. The criteria there is financial. And they're defined at risk that way because generally their parents don't have a college education. And so it's a way to develop language. But I think that the very worst thing that we could do is to tell parents, really the social norm is now you have to send your children to school at 4 instead of 5 or at 3 instead of 5. I think that what we need to do is define what kindergarten readiness means. What kind of language development? The STARS program and the Quality Initiative have done a really good job of that, and that is through family services. They go in with child care providers, they go into preschools, and they give them curriculum packages. This week we're going to do trains, and everybody gets to wear a railroad hat, and they get to sing, "I've Been Working on the Railroad," and we all march around the room like a train, and somebody's the engineer and somebody's the caboose, and all of those things are language taught in many different ways. And so those programs have developed and given free of cost to the preschools, the private preschools, and the daycares. They have given them curriculum packages and training to use those packages along the way. I'm a co-sponsor in this bill because I believe in it, but I want to make it very clear that I will only support this bill as long as we do not do a statewide program where we're adding classrooms to school buildings We're mandating it, or making the, not mandating, but making it the social norm. Well, your kid's never going to make it in preschool or in kindergarten if you don't get them ready. Well, my kids were ready and they didn't go to preschool. My kids were ready because I played with them, I talked to them, and we went train hunting and bird watching and walks and crunched leaves and all those things that taught them language development. But please, do not allow this bill to reach far into the home and make it the social norm that parents feel like the only way their children can succeed is if we push them out of the home a year earlier. Make it an option. Define what it is. Help parents understand. Your child will be ready for kindergarten when they know or can do this list of criteria. And let them make the choice where and how to do it. Thank you.
Representative Winters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, on and against this particular bill, there are a number of issues that have been raised by the good representative from the northern part of the state here already. But I believe that as we try to arrest what many perceive to be the declining moral structure of our country, this is not a method to do that for sure. As you take the child outside of the home in a proper good structure, I think that it causes long-term damage to the child, and I don't believe that this is the method that we should go about doing it. And also, when you consider that in the last 50 years of this particular program we have before us, the one that we are discussing is particularly Head Start, over $180 million have been spent in this particular pursuit. And we have not seen the corresponding health of our great country follow this this great expenditure. And so while I understand the former speaker's concerns and the reasons why that individual would want assurances that we wouldn't bind the hands of parents, one thing that I believe that we all know as a result of legislation is that it never winds up in the end the way it started in the beginning. It morphs over time. Murphy's Law is very active. And so we cannot allow an idea like this to have its place in the great state of Wyoming. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Patton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I yield the floor to the Speaker or Chairman Teeters.
Go ahead, Representative.
Go ahead and recognize me. Okay, I guess. Thank you. First of all, I'd like to start out by saying that the responsibility to make sure that our kids are ready for school is our responsibility. It's not the responsibility of the state. It's not the responsibility of any system or any other group of people. It is also our responsibility after our kids are in school to make sure that their education is what it should be. And I believe very strongly in personal responsibility. I supported this bill in committee for two reasons. The first reason is because we are spending $300 million a year in this state on pre-K programs. I would like the opportunity to look at how that money's spent and see if there isn't a better way to spend it to get the bang for the buck. The other reason why I support it is it's been assured to me that the committee will be brought a matrix of decisions, and we included that in the bill, that will allow us the ability to pick and choose from a list of different options. I can tell you that I will not support in this body a statewide comprehensive preschool program. What I will support is a system that allows parents the tools and gives them the ability to choose from the things that they think might be useful to help prepare their kids for school. And that's the direction that I like to see this go. I know some of us are concerned in this body, and I want to reiterate, I do not support state-mandated or a universal preschool system in this state. But I think it's something we ought to look at, especially in regards to the amount of money that we're spending. So I would ask you to support the bill.
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I mean, the statistics are very stark that kindergarten readiness is a key factor in learning success. I'm a little dubious about setting standards because I don't think that that's the driver for what causes kids not to be prepared for kindergarten. When parents have kids, they want the best for their kids. And I'm reminded of a study that was done a couple years ago by that organization that likes to take young males out and teach them camping and give them awards named after big birds and stuff. And they did a study, and what the study was what is it that 13 to 15-year-old young males liked? And they spent millions of dollars on the study, and it came back that 13 to 15-year-old males liked young females. I think that this study is sort of the same type of effort, because the things that drive the lack of preparation for kindergarten and kindergarten readiness are family medical conditions, or deadbeat daddies, or meth mommies, or abusive relationships, or no food in the kitchen. And setting standards doesn't address those kind of things. And learning processes don't address those kind of things. So what we have is a list of standards and then a list of social ills, which is just another bar or hurdle that we're not going to get over, because we're not the be-all and end-all of all social ills. We're a limited government. Families should raise their children. And so I'm concerned that this effort, while well-intentioned and well thought out, is a futile effort.
Representative Patton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This wasn't one of the big bills that I was anxious to see, particularly about childhood education. I've always understood quite clearly that probably the biggest challenge that my children had was me. So if there's some possibility of continuing education, I'm all for it. Having said that, I was stunned at the meeting for them to say that they were already expending close to $300 million a year, as the chairman has mentioned. There's no coordination, and it's not equal across the state. And I looked at my own community, and I thought, wait a minute, we have had at least four different adventures relative to this project. Some of it is just really babysitting while the two couple have to have some place for the child to stay. So with that, when we came to the one part of the amendment, you'll note where it says that we're looking for, on page 3, line 3, insert a matrix of. What's going on? What's really happening? I'm certainly not one to be supportive of a statewide plan all of a sudden coming up. But if there's some way or another, by the coordination of these people, are eager, ready, and willing to do it, we challenge them as to, you know, what can we do to help find out the coordination? What can we as a legislature do? And the one thing that they offered was, we're ready, we'll take the lead, and it won't cost a dime, and we'll have a report ready for you in October. We thought that that was probably hastening things a little bit too much, and so one of us suggested December, and that decision was really kind of left vague. But they are ready and willing and able, and at no cost, no specific plan for a statewide plan. Let's find out what really is going on, what works, how does it work, and act based on the knowledge of what is currently happening. So with that, I urge the adoption of the bill.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Chairman, excuse me, Mr. Chairman, apologize. I just want to get everybody's attention. Brothers and sisters of the 62nd, I do not sit on the Education Committee, and I did not hear the debate on this bill. However, I do sit on the Labor Health Committee, and approximately 50% of the children born in Wyoming are born into a family that's on Medicaid. And when I say family, oftentimes that is just a single mother. That is not a complete mother, father, and child. And this is the group that I think we need to help to succeed at every opportunity. And I think that's what this bill addresses, is to give them equal footing, and it also supports all children in our state on and for the bill.
Representative Winters.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I appreciate the statements that have been made. And this particular piece of legislation doesn't give us any assurances as to the fact that if we were to go with this particular piece of legislation, that other pieces of or other programs would be stopped as a result of it. And another thing, too, and the reason why I speak against this particular bill is that studies turn into legislation. And we certainly have societal problems, but quite honestly, government is not my mother, and it will never make a good replacement for a good mom and dad. And so this right here, I understand the heart and the intent behind it, but it also strikes to a much deeper philosophical question. Do we want to give the opportunity for state, for government, to become the mother of children? Thank you.
Representative Friedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I taught in an alternative school for 23 years, and I dealt with a lot of young single mothers, and they're my heroes. I have seen them grow much faster than I ever did when they're 17, 18, and sometimes as young as 15 as starting off with motherhood. And what happened was is they didn't have a support system. And they came to our schools, and there was a woman that was in, that was a teacher at our school, and she made a mommy's group. And at one time we had 23 young women that had children, and I should say that some of the parents came, the males came to the fathers. And basically what happened was is we opened it up to where that they could find what resources were available to them. We hooked them up with governmental entities. We hooked them up with church entities. We hooked them up with people that could help. And what I think is important about this bill is it's not prescribing what's going to happen. What it's trying to do, in my understanding of it, is to find out what we have. Understand what children can benefit from. Find out where they can go to find that. To give them standards. I remember these little girls would have a little list of things that they had put together to where they, and I shouldn't call them little girls, they're young women, where they could go to where they could help their children. It was pointed out in previous debate that everybody wants better for their children than what they had themselves. And what happens is the state doesn't want to be the mommy, doesn't want to be the daddy. But I think what happens is in the society that we live in today, everyone needs a little bit of help. And if the government, in this case the state, can say, here is your options. Here is something that we're already spending $30 million on. And you can do better for your children than what was done for you. It's worth the money to finding out where those opportunities are and to bring focus on improving parenting and to get kids ready for kindergarten. My wife teaches first grade, and she can tell you who has gone to a good preschool and who hasn't. She can tell you who is the stay-home mother. She can also tell you who didn't have aid to go through there. Don't be afraid of finding out the information. Let's have this study done, and if something comes back that stinks, let's kill it. But I think we have to find out what's available. Thank you.
Chairman Gingrey. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I really appreciate the good sponsor of the bill. I thought answered my questions extremely well, and I took confidence in the good chairman of labor in her statements that this is a good idea to move forward with, but in particular, she's going to really watch it to make sure that we don't go too far. So with that assurance from the chairman of labor, I feel much more
well, much more happy with the bill than I was at the beginning of this conversation. It seems to be a bill that that we're just going to look at it. And I was influenced by the discussion of the silos that we seem to be spending. Actually, the last speaker said $30 million. It's actually $300 million that we're spending, is what the good chairman of education said. And I'd really like to know what we're using that money for. And so hopefully through this report, we'll actually find out maybe even the opposite direction, that maybe we're spending some money that we shouldn't be spending. I went and looked in the statute, and there's under 21-4-302, we actually allow for school districts to set up preschools and to operate them if they so choose. One interesting part was that if they do set up a preschool, they must assess that child through the fourth grade and then compare it to kids that did not go through their program. It'd be interesting for those school districts that have done this to see what those numbers are, if any have actually done it. But I think it's important now that I didn't realize, and I appreciate this discussion because I got educated, I didn't realize we were spending so much money already. So hopefully through this study we would find out whether or not that money is being spent appropriately and if we should backtrack a little bit. So I'm actually on and for the bill. Chairman Madden.
Thank you. If the legislator from District 23 thinks he's in the dark about spending $300 million, I've been on the Education Committee the last 2 years and I didn't know about it either. I don't recall it being in the block grant as a special item. I think that they have the right to do that if they want to spend it out of their block grant, but I'm not sure that it cost us an extra $300,000 to be supplying them, but I might be wrong. Anyway, what I would like to have the sponsor of the amendment, or the sponsor of the bill do is give us a description of the qualifications of this department to do this study. And the other thing, what we're describing here on pages 2 and 3 looks like a lot of work, and it says there's no appropriation required, and I can't imagine with these 8% budget cuts and stuff that there's still money that would be able to go out and hire consultants and stuff like that without a special appropriation. Like, I'm not necessarily opposed to this bill or not, but it just seems like we don't have that included. Another thing I like to see in here is if there's some amendment that precludes building some kind of a state-financed and managed program. I think we should stop short of that, outline what the parameters are, what's ideal for early childhood learning as far as content, but that's about as far as I think the state needs to go at this time. Thank you.
Representative Filer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm speaking on and for the bill. As everybody here knows, my wife owns a child care facility. We have all of our employees go through the STARS program through the Department of Family Services. My wife makes sure that they go through this. And STARS helps out with teaching our teachers in our child care facility on what to teach children and gives them lessons plans and things like that. But I'm on it for this bill and co-sponsored on this bill because this will give a policy where it brings a bunch of groups together, kindergarten teachers, Department of Family Services, Workforce Services, all together to come up with something that we need to – our children need to know before they go into kindergarten. Give us something. That way you don't have some kids higher than others in certain things. And it just kind of gives us a level playing field. And that's why I'm on it for this bill. Thanks.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I am against this bill for reasons which have been well articulated by everyone else, so I won't be repetitive. However, I do have a question for the representative from Albany County. I see in the introductory part of the bill, it mentions the Early Childhood State Advisory Council as part of this group. And by good application of my desk computer, I see that we have a Wyoming Early Childhood State Advisory Council, which operates pursuant to Executive Order 2010. The charter was from 2011. And the mission statement is to serve Wyoming children and families by facilitating statewide collaboration, evaluating the early childhood system, and making recommendations to the governor, lawmakers, and state agencies further. So I would like to know, what is the benefit of this bill, and how does it add to the work that is evidently already happening? Thank you.
Representative Conley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you all for the really vigorous discussion about what I think is an incredibly important issue. I've got several notes, and hopefully I'll be able to answer all of the questions that you asked. For the previous speaker and the question about the Early Childhood Advisory Council, honestly, I've been honored. The governor just recently appointed me to that council, and so I'm one of the members of it. That council's responsibility is to report to the governor to start with and has an agenda that has been set with the executive branch in terms of what's its duties and obligations and what are its priorities, and has been doing so. Interestingly, because I agree with you that we should know what they're doing, I have a budget amendment. I'm preparing a budget amendment for this supplemental budget that has the Early Childhood Council also report to us, because I think it's important for us to know what they're doing, what they're finding, and what kinds of recommendations that they're talking with to the governor. And hopefully I'm not violating the rules, Patty, you can help me here, that we all know about the First Lady's initiative, and I'm sure that has something to do with, in fact, what the Early Childhood Advisory Council has been doing. But again, it's a different entity, and just one entity that's out there that's on this list of potential stakeholders. Now, to go to the previous speaker, and I was just running to my desk, our good economist friend, wanting to know about the money, how you can do all of the things that are being asked, and their expertise in doing so. There have been so many silos in the state that are involved with early childhood education in one way or another. And this particular agency, the Department of Family Service, has an expert within their ranks and a agency director who is absolutely and wholly committed to doing this kind of coordination effort among the parties that are listed as the kind of stakeholders. Every one of these stakeholders, and in particular the one that's been charged with bringing them together, is really interested in sitting at the table now, and maybe not last year and certainly not 5 years ago, but to sit at the table and kind of with all due respect to a previous speaker who had said that to be concerned because studies turn into legislation, my response to that is yes. All right? We should not be funding studies that sit in some desk drawer. Right? How many pieces of mail that do we get as legislators that are filled with data, filled with information, filled with good ideas, right, that we do nothing with? What this piece of legislation says is get those stakeholders at the table, bring them out to the community, talk about early childhood issues, talk about early childhood education, come up with some policy alternatives, and bring them to the body that makes the policy. We can talk about them, we can debate them, but we've been talking about some specific ideas from some very, very involved and educated stakeholders. That's exactly what I want as a policymaker. I want good data. I want good consensus discussions across the state so that we can debate specific policy measures. The DFS is willing to do it. They have the personnel to do it. They have the budget in order to engage in and finish the policy discussions. And they'll do it for us by October. And so with that, I'd just like to end. I just want to say with the good chair, woman from Labor Health who talked about in no way wanting kindergarten to kind of mush down younger. And I was so impressed with the testimony yesterday that talked instead about what we need to do in terms of thinking about kindergarten readiness is move up. Our kindergartens need to be ready for our kids, not vice versa, right? And with that, I'd like to end by saying I do not think this is a futile effort. This is not a futile effort. There couldn't be a more important effort for us than to think about early childhood education. And so I encourage you to vote aye.
Representative Winters.
Mr. Speaker, thank you. And again, on and against this amendment, I am thinking over the district that I have the privilege of supporting, and we have multiple agencies that are doing a wonderful job right now. And I again reiterate the fact that I believe that in many cases that a review of this sort right here will lead to legislation. And I am concerned that the end game of this agenda is a system that will draw these different agencies into a larger conglomerate to our societal detriment. And so, again, on and against this, these are impressionable children. And the idea of having a unified agency that teaches them a similar curriculum and teaches them to march in lockstep is something that I will, detrimental. And, again, on and against this bill.
Is there any further discussion on the bill? Been great discussion. Are you ready for the question? Question being called. All those in favor of Representative Hunt's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill Number 144 do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
The ayes have it. House Bill 144 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Privilege of the floor.
You got it.
Thank you very much. Back in the back gallery behind us, I'd like to introduce you to some young people. I promise I won't stutter and stammer on this one because my friend Heather Hamilton, who's among them, texted me the name of them just so I'd get this right. But anyway, please welcome. Okay, I am going to stutter and stammer. I've got to find this. Please welcome the Wyoming Farm Bureau's Young Farmers and Ranchers Committee and all the members. So welcome.
Welcome to the House. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Chairman, I move the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
You have heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carries.
The reading clerk will read the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. Speaker, your Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, beg to leave report as follows. House Bill Number 82, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill Number 49, recommended do pass. House Bill 50, recommended do pass. House Bill 57, recommended do pass. House Bill Number 33, amended. Following a failed roll call vote, the bill is deemed indefinitely postponed. Representative Brown moved that the Committee of the Whole rise and sit again. Rise and sit again. House Bill Number 6, recommended do pass. House Bill 100, recommended do pass. House Bill 92, recommended do pass. House Bill 107, following a failed roll call vote, the bill is deemed indefinitely postponed. House Bill 115, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 86, amended. And further amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 119, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 116, recommended do pass. House Bill 90, recommended do pass. House Bill 144, amended, recommended do pass. Representative Tom Reeder, chairman.
I move the adoption of Committee of the Whole report.
You have heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Committee of the Whole report is adopted. Congratulations, Representative Reeder. Next order of business is messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate file number 14, Correctional Industries, ayes 30. Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 119. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate file number 15, Inmate Transfers, ayes 30. Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 120. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate file number 17, Community Juvenile Services, ayes 30. Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 121. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate file number 20, State Land Transaction, ayes 28, noes 2. Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 122. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate file number 22, Uniform Consumer Credit Code Amendments, ayes 30. Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 123, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate file number 26, Authorization for Certain Radioactive Waste Facilities, ayes 27, noes 3. Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 124, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate file number 40, Cultural Trust Fund Board Membership, ayes 29, noes 1. Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 125, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate file number 11, Circuit Court Magistrates, ayes 19, noes 11. Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 126, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on a third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate file number 31, Wyoming Veterinary Medical Practice Act, ayes 30. Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk.
We're at that order of business of reports from standing committees.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 22, Serious Bodily Injury, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baker, Connolly, Gingery, Halverson, Croker, Crone. Those who voted no, Representative Miller, Walters, Watt, signed by Representative Gingery, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 36, Property Offenses, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representative Gingery, Halverson, Croker, Crone, Miller, Walters, Watt. Those who voted no, Congressman Baker and Connolly. Signed, Representative Gingery, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 139, Uniform Trust Code, respectfully reports saying back to the House with recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baker, Connolly, Halverson, Croker, Crone, Miller, Walters, Watt, one excused, Representative Gingery. Signed by Representative Crone, Vice Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 153, Representation of Children in Compact Proceedings, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baker, Connolly, Gingery, Halverson, Croker, Crone, Miller, Walters, Watt, signed by Representative Gingery, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 154, Representative Children in the CHINS Proceedings, respectfully reports same backs to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baker, Connolly, Gingery, Halverson, Croker, Crone, Miller, Walters, Watt, signed by Representative Gingery, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number five, Agriculture, State and Public Lands and Water Resources, to whom was referred House Bill number 25, Simulcasting of Paramutual Events, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blake, Campbell, Eklund, Greer, Hunt, McKim, Semlich, Winters, Dan Zwanzer, and the signature of Representative Semlich, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number five, Agricultural, State, and Public Lands and Water Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 38, Use of Water Outside the State, respectfully reports the same back to the House with recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blake, Campbell, Eklund, Greer, Hunt, McKim, Semlich, Winters, Dan Zwanzer, signed by Representative Semlich, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number seven, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred House Bill 35, Search and Rescue Operations, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Bleckery, Byrd, Gay, Green, Kirkbride, Petroff, and Dan Zwanzer, two excused, Representative Berger and Paxton, signed by Representative Bleckery, Vice Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number seven, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred to House Bill number 42, Land Use Planning, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representative Bleckery, Byrd, Gay, Kirkbride, Petroff, Dan Zwanzer, three excused, Representatives Berger, Green, and Paxton, signed by Representative Bleckery, Vice Chairman.
We're at that the order of business of committee announcements. Chairman Zwanzer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number eight, Transportation, Highway, and Military Affairs, will meet here in 10 minutes in House 17 to discuss the following bills. House Bill number 147, Vehicle Registration Fees, Purple Heart Exemption. House Bill number 127, Driver's License, Veterans Designation. House Bill 148, Railroad Security Officers. And House Bill 95, Railroad Crossings on Track Vehicles.
Chairman Davidson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your committee number six, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, will meet at 7 o'clock in the morning tomorrow, and we'll take up House Bill 81, Large Projects, and House Bill 122.
Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 10, Labor, will meet in 10 minutes in room 302 for an informational meeting on health insurance exchanges. The whole House of Representatives, as well as the Senate, is invited to attend that. We have a really good speaker. I would also remind you tonight is Leap into Leadership kickoff dinner. And my last announcement is Labor will also meet tomorrow, 10 minutes after noon recess in room H17 to discuss House Bills 93 and 94, medication administration by pharmacists and immunization by pharmacists.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 9 would like to announce the meeting tomorrow morning in room 302 on standing committee meeting notice for Wyoming's Governor's Energy Engineering STEM Integration Task Force, commonly called the Task Force, and we urge all of you to come. Then also on Monday, your committee number 9 will have a meeting at 8 o'clock on room H18, House Bill 61, Banking Division Nationwide Licensing System, House Bill 62, Innocent Landover Amendments, and House Bill 56, Wyoming Pollution Discharge. And just listening to the reports from your standing committees, I think we're busy.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Speaker, general file for tomorrow. House Bill 158, 160, 38, 36, 153, 154, 22, 35, 42, 139, 25, and such other bills as may be read in. With that, Mr. Speaker, I move the House adjourn until 10 o'clock a.m. tomorrow, January 18, 2013.
You have heard the motion. All in favor of adjourning until tomorrow, 10 o'clock, January 18, 2013, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. House will be adjourned until tomorrow, January 18, 2013, at 10 a.m.